This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Listeners, I have a confession to make. I am a night cereal eater. I grew up loving cereal as a breakfast choice, but when you get older, you can't really have like a bowl of ice cream, more or less, for breakfast every day, or else it'll really slow your day down. But thanks to Magic Spoon, I could have cereal in the morning, and then more specifically, I could have cereal late at night as my fourth meal, and they make healthy cereal. 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein. It's like having a post-workout shake right like at the end of the night, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. Only 140 calories a serving. It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, and low-carb. You could build your own box or get a variety pack with available flavors like cocoa, fruity, frosted, peanut butter, blueberry, and cinnamon. Oh, I am a fan. There's some experimental flavors that I've been testing that are exciting, so I'm hoping those come out soon for everyone's consumption. But until then, I got to admit, the peanut butter blueberry combo is a very fun combo, and frosted and cinnamon is another combo I'm messing with. I haven't gotten the proportions right, the portions right, or the ratios right, whatever. I haven't gotten it right, but frosted and cinnamon, I think once I figure it out, I'll reveal it to you guys, and then we can have some, you know, those are two things that I look for in a cereal, frostedness and cinnamonness, without using any brand names or anything like that. That's something that excites me. So go to magicspoon.com/ham. And grab your delicious cereal to try today. And be sure to use our promo code HAM, H-A-M, at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/ham and use the code HAM to save $5 off. Thank you to Magic Spoon for sponsoring this episode. What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuckboy, standing 6'2", 289 pounds from the south shore of Nassau County, Long Island. He's Johnny G, the number one fuckboy. All you gotta do is trust me. Jackson, Maine. Also joining me in the High Mighty Studios, my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabrus. Artie, give him a shout out. Absolutely no response as usual. Also joining me in the High Mighty Studios, I can't tell you guys how cool this is to have. I've known this dude for like 15 years, exclusively via the internet, but over the last couple of years, we've had a lot more to talk about. He's had a little bit more free time, is a terrible way to phrase that, but he's from the fucking, the legend himself. This is huge for me. From 70s big, I know you have way bigger, more important USA credits now, but from 70s big, it's Justin Lassick, baby.
It's High and Mighty with JG.
Yeah. Dude, this is fucking thrilling to me to be able to. I like literally was talking to my wife this morning who's out of town, and I was just articulating. She's like, "Is this the guy who you always were talking about? His website?" I'm like, "Yes." Remember when I was training for powerlifting and I was doing that program that SNC V2?
Yeah.
The 70s big LP. It's been so crazy to be. And then in my history of knowing you, like, you've then gone on to do great. You've done, to me, crazy, interesting, wild things, like big choices in life.
I'd say it's pretty crazy, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say. Yeah, let's get into it, Justin. First of all, how you fucking been, man?
You know, I'm healing and feeling it, baby. Yeah. There was a big old rough patch. You know, there's with like trauma and emotional health and TBI shit, which is like what special forces guys or soft guys, special operations, they get that trifecta of shit. And so there's can be ups and downs, and then different phases of the healing will have different qualities to it, like irritation and rage, or sadness and depression, or like panic and helplessness and anxiety and fear. So I just went through like a tough phase, and then kind of I was always working on myself for hours every day, whether it was like physical therapy 2 years ago in the hospital or doing meditation and journaling and all the emotional health stuff. And I kind of like finally turned the corner a few months ago. And so things are going well, man. And I'm getting more into the creating the content type stuff. That's what I did before I was in the Army. And so there is going to be a little bit of a little bit of a CPR on some 70s big stuff. I got two book ideas. And
yes, this is so thrilling to me.
And so I can kind of crank the persona up on that. And then I'm doing some other stuff with more emotional health or wellness geared stuff. So yeah, it's cruising and things are looking up and I'm content in my life. I was never really content. I put a green hat on. I was like, whatever. I want to go to combat. And then went to combat, you know, just nothing ever satisfied. But now I just feel content in what is coming up and what my future will entail.
That's great, man. Also in there, you so casually talk about I did some, for the listeners who might not know, this episode is coming out a little later in the summer, but we're recording on the 2-year anniversary of your first steps.
So today's June 18th and I got blown up on 5 March 2019. And then less than 4 months later on the 18th of June, 2 years ago, I took my first steps and I put that up on my Instagram. I reposted it so that
it's fucking awesome, man. I was crying when I watched Fast 7 this morning and then crying again, watching your fucking Instagram before we got on, man. It's fucking gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's awesome to watch.
Yeah. And I remember sitting in the hospital. I don't know if it was my mom or a nurse or something, but they're like, if you could pick a superpower, what would it be? And I was like, well, to walk. And then I just burst into tears. And so I don't know, with trauma, there's a thing with dissociation. There's your brain literally has brain damage and certain networks of the brain don't properly function. And so it's when you're in the earlier phases of it, talking about it just almost results in a dissociation. So you can almost see that in the video, me looking back at it, that I was just trying to be it feels like this in the fucking sockets. And and then once I realized what the fuck was happening, it was just it racked me. Yeah.
When you're talking about being disassociated, you mean you sort of don't feel like you're inside yourself while it's happening? Or
that's
something that can happen.
Yeah. That's usually around the event itself. I'll circle back to that. But in this case, it's almost like you emotionally dissociate. And so I remember there's another guy who he's much older than me and he worked in kind of around the Capital region because Walter Reed's in DC and he got hit by a rocket. He lost his lower leg and he would come see me all the time. And he was like, how do you talk about this without showing any emotion? Every time I did, I broke down in tears and I was like, I don't know. I guess I have to explain this 6 times a day because there's not a lot of combat casualties. And I'm I almost died pretty hard. No, I'm a medic. So when I saw the pictures of what the fuck my legs looked like, I just was like, I don't know how the fuck I survived. And I do know in retrospect is because I trained my dudes how to fucking do this stuff for a long time and they executed properly and saved my life. And then we also had blood, units of blood and a little cold pack backpack. And I had the interpreter carrying it. And without blood, I'm pretty sure I would have died. But
Jesus, yeah, man. I'm
not even high yet. What was I going to circle back to?
Disassociating. So you separate your emotion from it.
So what we were doing was a valley clearance in this. We were fighting ISIS-K, which is a Khorasan offshoot of ISIS. And it was located on the border of Afghanistan and Pakistan. And so we were clearing down a valley. And then there were lots of IEDs that was their SOP, their standard operating procedure, became just throwing IEDs everywhere because that's what was working in Iraq and Syria. And as they drew down there, those TTPs, the tactics basically came to our region. So we found a bunch of them and bipped them blow in place as we were maneuvering down with rucks on. And I was, I like to lead in the element, not in the front of my element, but I like to be in the lead element to kind of push and find the terrain. And, because combat, it was cool until it wasn't. But I like small unit tactics and everything. So we're maneuvering. And then we go up on the trail because there was an IED in the wadi, which is a ditch that comes out of the valley. And one of my Afghans walked through it and it didn't detonate. And so we're just like, oh, fuck. So we went back up on the trail, which is, when you have normal places where people walk, you can expect more there. And people were, Afghan EOD guys were deliberately clearing it with a minesweeper. And I was planning an assault on this compound that was in the middle of the valley. We had another ODA, another special forces team on the other side. And we don't want to pass it because if someone was in there, we had to shoot. We'd be doing a Polish ambush, shooting at each other.
Yeah, you don't
want to
cross shoot. That I know from video games, so I feel weird tagging in there. Justin,
Most video games, unless you're going to play on the computer like Tarkov or something, they don't have friendly fire.
Right.
So I was planning an assault. I was kind of helping someone become an assault leader, and I liked I would have like a platoon sized element a lot of the time with like two different squads essentially in it, assault cell and two teams. And so I was planning an assault, and then I had this ruck on that I was about to take off because I wanted to go down there and assault with him. But I like adjusted it and took a step, and it was like, and I think if my hands were down, then I would have had either the hands or the fingers blown off, because usually guys lose that stuff.
Right, just because pure concuss, like, of how powerful it is, like, it affects your bottom half insanely. Obviously.
Yeah, and then for me, it, like, blew my left leg off, excuse me, my left foot off immediately, and then the blast went up into my, basically my crotch, and then it, like, blasted and burned everything on my right leg down to the bone. And I still had that foot because a solo boots are fucking badass.
Holy shit.
Wearing a solo mountaineering boot. And like when they took it off, like everything from the ankle down was perfect. No damage. And everything above was like fucking black to the bone.
Oh my God, dude. If you fucking, hey, sponsor this motherfucker.
Seriously. A solo boot saved my foot. Now, the fact that it was amputated is neither here nor there, but...
That's not the boot's fault. Yeah.
Dude, the other boot fucking, you know, was exploded, and the snipers were up on this, like, they were like 50 meters away or so. I'm not a good source on where they were, but they were up on a ridgeline, and they actually shot a dude, like, across the valley. But one of the dudes looks down, and the tongue of my fucking boot was next to him. It just was like... And like flew up there afterwards.
Oh my God, dude.
So I immediately fucking, I don't know what the hell happened. And I immediately start yelling. I have that 3 to 5 seconds of complete sheer terror. And I'm like hands out, reaching towards my friend and like yelling, help, help, like probably like 8 times. And then they come up to me. And then now about the dissociation, several minutes in, because at first I was like, was that an RPG? Because like the way it hit me was like at a weird angle. And because you can shape charges, IEDs, to kind of like, they can come out of walls or out of trees and shit like that. So the shapes can just change where the blast goes. And they're like, no, it was an IED because like they watched it happen. And then one of my friends was blown up with me. He was here for dinner last night, actually.
Oh, shit. And, he survived too. That's fucking crazy and amazing.
There were two other Americans. He got hit with a lot of shrapnel because he was like standing in front of me. And then there was another infantry dude who mainly got TBI'd and maybe flecked with some shrapnel. And then there was an Afghan leader. And he got hit with shrapnel and stuff, but all of them retained their limbs. So that's good. But after several minutes of kind of like, go ahead. Were you going to say?
No. I was just fucking, I'm caught up in the moment. Keep going, please.
After several minutes, this is what happens. Fucking like in my memory, this happens first before the blast happens. Because memory can be reconsolidated. You can have anterograde and retrograde amnesia. Anteros before, retros after. And regardless, everything was just fucking white. And now if you have done psychedelics, kind of like get into that mindset of like what consciousness is. Because all of my meditation and psychedelics experiences and stuff and exploring awareness and consciousness, I think I was just like removed from what the contents of consciousness are. And it was just like whatever is external to like yourself and in whatever that is, whatever's appearing there. And at the time I was just like sitting there. It was just fucking white, nothing else. And I was like, what the fuck is this? Which is like a Zen meditation. It's like you can sit with what is this, and that is something to explore in meditation, right? Or psychedelics. And I was just like, what is this? Which I had never done any of those things, by the way, before all this. And then I was like, well, I guess this is my existence now. Like that was my fucking personality. Like, oh, I guess this is like how it is now. Like whatever. And then I could hear like, because there was a machine gun, our friendly machine gun shooting back because that initiated a firefight. It was like 10 meters away somewhere in that realm. Very close. And my helmet kind of rolled back. My peltors came off, like my hearing protection. So it was really loud in my ear, but I was still kind of like out of it. So I was like, oh, something's happening, and start rushing into the contents of consciousness. Like what? Like, oh, I'm like I'm a person. Like there's something, like I was doing something, something's Jesus. Wrong. And then I was getting jostled around because they were putting tourniquets on me, and I had 3 tourniquets on each leg because I had like, my quads were kind of big back then, but I had 3 tourniquets on each leg, and I was getting jostled around. I was like, oh, something's happening to me. And then it was like, just like a swirl.
Landed in
and
your conscious. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I was just like back in my body or whatever in the moment was, like planning the assault, about to adjust my ruck, and then boom. And so as far as dissociation goes, that's an example of what happens in a moment of trauma, because there's evolutionary utility in that shit from because sometimes
don't
the animal
your mind from it
that too, but like animals can sometimes wake up and run away later, or they're at least not awake when they're getting fucking eaten alive.
Oh, so it's like a self-preservation. Yeah, yeah, it's like, don't be here for this because this hurts and could be potentially awful. I mean it's definitely awful, could be potentially even worse.
So let's see. I think the next, what I should do next is a slight pause, and then we'll resume what we're talking about, because I want to show you this. I know that the video is not on the podcast, but one of my friends who saved my life got this peace pipe at some estate sale. It's a piece of bamboo that I've put, I guess it's a tabacky pipe, but I got some cannabis in there.
Hell yeah.
Because we are on the High and Mighty show.
I have a little, the brand is called Wellies. They call themselves like wellness joints. So, you know, it's
nice. Is there like
health.
CBD or something in it?
Yeah, I think it's like Entourage Effect. It's got some THC, CBD.
Nice.
All different.
Yeah. There's a place in Denver called Kind Love, and this is their Arc, which is a sativa that is like the only weed that makes my eyes bloodshot.
That's awesome. That's, dude. I'll give you a little context from my perspective of, so for the listeners, Justin used to, well, and still does, and will again, run this site called 70s Big, which is sort of like peak Gabrus interests. It's like old school bodybuilding, strength, power training, like all the stuff of like Ed Cohn stories, Croc Rose, like all the shit that I just loved coming up as like a CrossFitter who preferred powerlifting in my 20s, fell in love with the 70s Big, like, mantra, the short shorts, like you guys were the forefront of short shorts, and you always
what
had
an
great...
honor to hear that.
Yeah, I mean it's super popular amongst men now, but I believe because of our love, even though we didn't know each other at the time, our love of like the 70s golden era bodybuilders, yeah, movie stars and shit, like that stuff always worked on me, and I got locked in, and it was like, people talk about finding community on the internet a lot, and it was something that I would frequently be like, this is corny, but yeah, you were the first, like, you were the first person whose like website I read that I like shot emails to, or like, yeah, commented on articles, because I was like, Justin, this program is perfect for me. I'm playing rugby and training for a powerlifting meet at the same time with this. And then you are always referencing SFO and LEO in your training prescriptions of like, and you know, some of these guys, you need to, don't worry about mass as much because you're going to be rucking 12 hours. And you happen to know a lot about that. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. That's another thing. And you can tell, congratulate me on my choices to be a smoking weed comedian instead of a Navy SEAL, which is what I wanted to be from like 8 until 17.
Like, well, first I want to say that, that's okay, and you can forgive yourself for that, because obviously it didn't work out so well for me, but I don't think
what
that people...
What a way to phrase that, I'm sorry.
But also, I don't think that people need to do something like that to feel like a man, or to feel like they have accomplished something, or to have purpose. And that's one of the messages that I want to, like, generally speaking, want to kind of, like, always push out in what I do, because so many young guys that, you know, went on mission with me, whether infantry or whatever, they're like, I just don't feel like I have a purpose now that I got out. And it's like, well, the purpose is like, that's what you can find as an individual with anything. And you don't need something external to do that. But a lot, I mean, I had a guy who's like 40 or 50 or something. He was like, I hate myself because I didn't do the military thing. And I was like, well, can you fucking, and he's like, what can I do to like support? I was like, well, you can fucking forgive yourself, you know, because it doesn't make you a man to do this stuff. And that's kind of tying back to 70s Big. Like, I was wanting to, like, you know, achieve manliness, but not like whatever manliness it like kind of became from like societal input. So I was almost satirizing it.
Yeah. Can I jump in here a little bit? Because this is something that really attracted me to you, and I consider a part of my brand now, is like masculinity without toxicity. It's like you can be, it's like, being a man without, it's like without the removal of like traditional machismo shit. And it's like, there's ways to do it now. And there's ways to talk about, I want to have big shoulders, or I like the way that this person looks. Like, there's ways to do it without. And that was another thing that attracted me, because I've always been part of those communities. I play fucking men's league rugby. I played football in high school. I played rugby in college. I've been always in the gym. I've always done martial arts. And there's always like a vibe of masculinity, but usually in an annoying way, in a homophobic way, in a misogynistic way, in a bullying way. And I
I'm
going to
sum it up for you. It's Tommy Tough Guyism.
Tommy Tough Guyism. I love it. That's a great phrase.
That you see that in special operations. And in my job, for example, there's like they kind of are changing the structure of this, but there was like an entire company in our battalions devoted to essentially more of a direct action mission where those guys would do more shooting and they didn't do the other Green Beret skills because the combat is important, but that's not the sole thing that we should be doing. Like teaching, and we're building rapport and we can work by with and through an indigenous population.
But some units are like, you guys are just the fucking warriors of shit, like special extra focus.
Like Ranger Regiment is a light infantry unit that is used for light infantry taskings, like in combat. And then our unit, the bread and butter, is unconventional warfare, which is what those guys were doing that started in Vietnam, but it goes back to the Office of Strategic Services from World War II, splitting into the CIA and its special forces. And so we have a lot of different taskings, but this particular company was focused on direct action. And then, so what you get out of that is like a culture that kind of loses some of the other things that make us effective. And they're kind of like a very specific tool for a job. And they almost sometimes don't have the ability to go back to being a generalist, but
they
those
turn
guys
into
are
hammers.
So that was the nice way.
Nails.
Yeah, that was the nice way of kind of doing the preface for them. But that what you get is Tommy Tough Guys who just want to jack steel, shoot guns, which is cool. But when you apply the Tommy Tough Guy, like, you know, hazing new people and like just being a dick to people and like insults being your primary, like it's exhausting. And all of the friends that I'm very close with, we don't identify with that. And like, based on the teams I've been on great teams. You can have fun while you do it too. Like the medic from my first team, he's one of my best friends and we would dick around all the time. And I would joke around in combat too. Like,
well, so. That you're directly in my wheelhouse here. I've constantly been in these super macho and super macho, removing the idea of the military and specifically special forces, civilian super macho situations. Sure. And I always gravitate, like, I'm the one who's busting balls or being cute. Like, back in the day, when someone would be homophobic, I would act gayer, like, at a spot. Like, that's not something you're supposed to do anymore, but I would, you know, touch a thigh during a rugby match to a guy who used the F word just to fucking spite him. And finding the other kind of goop, and that's what I think when 70s Big came around, it was like, I want to be friends with dudes who are trying to bench 405, but don't talk about, like, if you don't bench 405, you're a pussy. Like, they don't care that people bench less. Like, your attitude has always been like, improve yourself and stuff. So I've always dug that. And you couldn't know this at the time, but I was like such a little special forces head. I'm like reading like Chief Doc Watson's like Vietnam point man stories when I'm 11 years old. Cause I was like preternaturally smart. I was this smart at 11 is what I learned. And
no
so
progress.
Yeah. No progress. At 22, I was just like at my peak, but I was as smart as my 22-year-old self at 11. So I just set up potential and disappointment for every teacher and parent I've ever had. But that being said, I was like reading about Vietnam and blowing up hooches and I'm like, special forces. And then I was a beach lifeguard. So I was a good swimmer. And I was like, this is perfect for me. And then eventually my high school psych teacher, I was taking psych because I was like, I might go in the Navy SEALs or FBI counterterrorism. I was like all over the place. And my psych professor's like, you should do comedy. I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, you're so obviously want to be the funniest guy in class. You obsess with attention. It's how you interact with everyone. And I was like, nice try. I went away to college as a biology major for one semester and was like, no, she was right. I want to be a comedian. And I started to think about what it would really entail to do something like that. And I was like, it's not sports team training at that point, which I never minded telling me to take laps. But the second it's like life and death stuff, I was like, maybe this isn't for me. And I just was like, I'll do improv.
You know, what's interesting about the comedy though, is that it's a rapport builder, but it's a very effective thing to corral Tommy Tough Guys in those environments. Because if someone was, we would have a guy that would, and I love him, but he would be the type that would be, he'd go through the throat with an insult and like make a dig that would be insulting.
That would piss somebody off.
Right. That would kind of be like, cause he was angry and was lashing back. And so my default would be the jokes kind of like you, but like the more silly, the better, because then it like brings their guard down and it like makes the guys that they're going after more comfortable, you know? So it's kind of like a, oh, you're just over there and you want to just wear your panties, you know, just saying something stupid. Yeah. You just want to wear your panties under your kid all day and have no pants on, like just something really, really dumb. And then they're just like, you know,
it's hard because it's hard to counter stupidity with like anger in a way, like, and it also is your defense is now where I'm just getting into the psychology of verbal sparring. But if you make if he tries to be angry with you and you're being silly, anyone else watching he looks like such an asshole. Like if you're not affected by it, if you're like, you're right, I do like it like that. My mom said, actually, you weren't that good of a lay. She wishes you could have hit her longer. And as they're like, what? Wait, what? And you're like, ha, keep trying to dig in now, motherfucker, because the shoe is on the other foot.
Think of it like it's a way to influence situations because it completely, you can completely like steer the group into like a different mindset. And that isn't just important on an ODA, but like the team aspect of that is very unique because you're like an older guy. You're like doing something similar to what you did after school in high school, playing a sport, but you're doing it like all the time, every fucking day. And then when you're on deployment, you're doing it in a place where you're getting attacked all the time.
Yeah, and it's fucking crazy.
So it's just like a really unique thing, but like how the culture of everybody is doing will influence the success. So I think that comedy can directly influence that. And I think it's better to think of it as influencing compared to manipulating.
Right.
Because you can get into emotional manipulation in groups too, where it's just bringing everybody down. But I think the comedy brings everything up. One time I went into this compound and it was kind of like a giant castle, like giant walls around the edge and like two stories. And the Afghans went in and they went right. So I cleared left. There was this giant dog with a head the size of your body barking at me. And I had my safety off with the holdover of my EOTech holding over top of his head so it would shoot him between the eyes. I was like, please don't fucking come down here. And he was like, arr, arr, arr. And then he just like receded back into a giant haystack. But anyway, I went in there. Everything was fine in the compound. I'm like looking around because it's like very, it's interesting. It's like fucking people live here. This is a thorough country. It's like mud. And then this turkey came around the corner and not like a JT, not like a jive turkey, but like an actual turkey that was like, his head was probably like up to my chest or something. He was fucking huge, which animals don't do well in that country, especially like the cattle or the beef. The cows don't do well. But this turkey came around. I was like, holy shit, look at the size of this motherfucking turkey. And I'm like, immediately call my buddy. I'm like, hey. And he's like, yeah. And he's like, wondering if I had a situation, nothing dangerous, no rounds were popping off, but he's like, well, you know, maybe there's, he's like, well, I wonder what's going on in there. And I'm like, you gotta come look at this fucking turkey, man. I was like, it's a fucking huge, look at this jive ass turkey. And he came in and he just walked around the corner and just started laughing. And like, so that was how I was on mission. Like I was in control of a, you know, 30 to 40 people, but then I was like, as an aside, breaking the fourth wall and kind of like dicking around, which was fun.
Dude. That sounds like a scene in a fucking like, you know, one of those dusty action movies about special forces guys where they're in a compound and like three false starts as to like, you know, everyone's on edge and it's like, oh, it's just a dog in the haystack. And then the last one is the turkey. And they're like, ah, and then the attack would happen. And like in the movie, it would be
For a second, it's like the ending of a G.I. Joe episode.
Yeah. Everyone's like, wow, we learned a lot about turkeys today, didn't we, Firefly?
So check this out. Again, shit. We'll have to verbally describe this.
Hell yeah. Oh, okay. Justin, real quick, said, I'm going to show you two things during this, and you're going to think they're both really cool. And I was like, sure. The first one he showed is an actual dope-ass indigenous, like, wooden piece by a wooden-looking piece. And then the second thing he just pulled out was, you can tell them.
This is the M4 that's destroyed and doesn't function anymore. That's why I have it. But it was blown apart.
This is the M4 you were carrying?
Yeah. So... This is the hand piece. It's just like a Magpul plastic, but that blew apart. The whole buttstock is in pieces in this bag right here.
Damn.
And then the barrel, you can't see it, but like this rail was cracked and then the barrel's bent. And then I tell you what, man, I'm not sponsored by anything, but this EOTech got blown apart.
Still intact.
But these shits, if the glass breaks, then they keep a zero. So like you can still shoot them.
You mean like they don't lose focus.
Right. As long as it's attached to the gun still. Well, no, a zero is like if you're, you have to zero your gun every time you put a new optic on, like to make sure that at this distance it's hitting the bullseye where it's hitting where I'm aiming.
Oh, cool.
And yeah. So if a zero gets thrown off, then, you know, a really bad one would be like if I'm trying to shoot you in the chest and it doesn't even hit you, for example. That would be like pretty severe. But usually when shit gets kind of broken from, you know, blowing up, it doesn't work. And the EOTechs work is the kind of the point on that.
I'm literally looking at this gun, this M4, and, you know, this makes you say something like, man, Americans really know how to make a product. But I'm also looking at the person who was holding that gun when the same explosion went off. I'm like, wait, no, some Americans are a fucking product. And like you touched on it a little earlier, but, and we'll get into more training stuff in a sec, but you touched on it a little bit earlier, but you said part of the thing that saved your, one of the main factors in saving your life was that your guys, you were the, one of the medics in the crew, right? A corpsman. Do you guys call them corpsmen in the Marines?
We're just like the official term is special forces medical sergeant, but we have like our MOSs are numbers and letters. So I'm an 18 Delta.
Okay.
Like there's a Bravo Charlie Delta Echo on the team, other ones. But so there's two of each of those. There's like an engineer, a medic, a commo guy, and a weapons guy. There's two of each of those. And so I'm one of the medics on the team. Yeah.
But you had all your guys, you were working with them on like triage, like response stuff.
All the guys that treated me were on my first trip. We were all like attached or on a different team at that point. But they're all my friends. So I'd trained them in at least like 30 legitimate sessions or of medical training. And I had to fight for extra training before that trip where I got blown up, where I feel like if I didn't piss people off and like go around them to get us more training, I don't know what would have happened to me. You know, like Jesus. I got us like two extra days of training for the entire company. And, I don't believe
in a lot of higher power shit, but every once in a while you hear some story like that where it's like, I just felt the need that we needed to do like, let's just check blank one more and the parachute's not there or whatever, you know, like I just felt the impulse. It's just like, that's so fucking
dude. That's happened to me in combat where I was told to assault up this like hill and there was a cliff on each side pretty much. And so it's maybe like 50 meters across, terraces going up that are like 2 to 3 feet. And then I knew the reporting cause I was a medic, but I would look at all the intel stuff. And I knew one of them had like, this was a bed down location, a command and control center and shit like that. That's what they use it for. Like, so I was like, well, I know that place is bad. And I was, there's this giant window and a fucking tree. And he was like, you're going to assault up that way. And I was like, well, I'm going to keep doing what I've been doing all day, which is shooting grenades first and seeing what happens. And then going, and we call that recon by fire, but like, there's no advantage. Like I wasn't sneaking around. It was broad daylight. And this was like an extremely, if you're in a video game, you'd be like, we shouldn't run up that.
Like, like we're going to get murked. And it's like, this is for real though.
I had the dude shoot a grenade and a fucking dude started running. So me by myself was engaging in the window and the tree. The scary window was just like throwing rounds like 1, 2, 3, and then going back to the tree, like do, 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 just aiming back and forth. And then a machine gun opens up from the tree. And I'm behind like a 2.5 foot terrace, like some, you know, if you were in front of your couch, like laying down in front of your couch, I was like in behind something like that. And I would get down and I would change mags. I went through like 3.5 mags in this firefight. And we call this fire superiority. You're trying to gain superiority. But like when it's M4 versus machine gun,
one of those wins
like really quickly. But luckily their machine gun was jamming. So their rate of fire would stop, and then I would shoot at them to try and make them stay down and stuff to try. And I was bringing my machine gun up, but then I got pinned down for like 5 minutes. But going back to
five minutes in this moment feels like a fucking full day of class.
Oh, yeah. Right? Like, but I joked like around, though. Look, this is tying a lot of things in together because I was laying back there, and then another one 500 meters to my left started shooting at us. And I was like, I didn't have cover from that one. I just had cover from the guy that was like 60 meters away. And I was like, I'm going to get shot in the legs and my legs are big and I'm going to fucking bleed out and I might die right here. And I was just like, fuck. And then I looked at the dude next to me, who's an American, and he was in Ranger Regiment. He had been in a lot of combat for like 10 years. And I looked at him and I was like, dude, this fucking sucks. Like making a face. And he just wasn't amused at all. And he had been in way more combat than me. And I was like, all right, well, if he's worried, then this is not good at all.
That would be, Justin, that would be exactly me. I'd be like, no, pretty nuts, huh? And when the guy who's an actual, like even more experience goes, like doesn't give you any fun back, you're like, oh,
it's kind of like Tropic Thunder, actually. I'm like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
But dude, two things happened next. So smoke, you throw a smoke grenade and it takes some time to billow up, but it can conceal your movement. And this was a situation where that would be really cool. Because like
it
there's
would be
this
very
tree,
beneficial to be able to
a tree
move.
Like smaller than my forearm was just like getting splintered from all the rounds hitting. And so somebody throws a grenade, but like the grenade landed like 5 feet in front of me. And I was like, are you fucking serious? I was like, can you throw that maybe a little fucking farther? Like this, I was like, why are we not airstriking this? Like, what the hell's going on? And my other buddy's like, just stay down. Like, I was like, yeah, I'm not getting up. Like, this is,
don't worry.
And then you know what I felt though? This. Something land on my fucking shoulder and roll off. And I saw, I assumed it was a grenade from the bad guys, like a frag grenade. And I just was like put my helmet, angled my helmet towards it so it wouldn't get my neck. And I just was fully expected to like just get blown up with a fucking grenade. And then it goes and started shooting smoke. So some dickhead behind me from my, you know, my element threw a fucking smoke grenade. It hit that tree and landed on me and scared the fucking shit out of me. And then I picked it up and like threw it forward, but those things are hot as fuck. So I was like, yeah. So it's like all this like little side shit is going on while there's a machine gun like, and like shit, you know, like probably like the weirdest like action comedy scene that I probably was in, you know, yeah, nothing bad was happening to any of us.
A lot of your
like,
other action scenes have way less comedy. The one you told me about earlier, the titular big one, that's not that funny.
That one was kind of fucked. And then I was on a lot of ketamine.
That one was pretty, if I had to really dig on it, that one was pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's like I just a lot of ketamine.
And going back to the gun, dude, this is like the shards of Narsil now. Like the sword that was broken from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I know. Like, that's so fucking, like, truly, and I'm being such a fucking, a little bit of a cornball here, but it's like one of those things where you're like, damn, that's a well-made American machine. And then you realize there's a person behind it who has prosthetic legs, and it's like, whoa, that's a fucking American human machine. But like, you survived that because you trained your men, like you said, but definitely part of it was you, like, you're a tough, hard person. Like you're, that's in you. That's like inside of you before, as long as I've known you and it's parasocial. Yeah. And inside of you is fucking, you're a fucking hard ass.
Well, I appreciate that. When it happened, like after I came back from that dissociation thing, I was like, fuck, if I'm going to live through this, this needs to be a perfect clinic. Cause like when we do training, we call them clinics when you're doing like working on trauma scenarios. And I was just like,
we
need to get fucking blood, TXA, which helps clots from breaking down. It's like something you give when someone's bleeding really bad. You can basically flush an IV with it and then hook up blood, which is if you're a fucking baller medic, then you got that shit lined up going in that order. So I was like, we need fucking TXA. We need blood. I was like, hey, this motherfucker had the blood. Where's he? And he was like, the Afghan interpreter he ran away. And I was like, well, go fucking get the blood. The other dude has the litter. And then I was like, my mags and my shear, I always kept trauma shears on my chest. They just fucking just blew out. So, you know, it just went like a fireworks. And so I would looked down for my shears. They weren't there. And I just, the guy who was leaning over me, putting tourniquets on, I just took his shears, cut my shirt off. And I was like, fucking put a saline lock in here, which is going to be an IV. And I was like, and fucking get ketamine ready. Cause I was, it was insanely painful. Like,
that's what I'm saying is like, you have the fucking wherewithal to like run your guys through it. Now that's you, that's training. That's like lizard brain shit. Like once you've done it, like once it's wrote, but this is something
that
deeper.
Yeah. their ability to do it. That's part of training, but like the ability to like, be in blown up so that you have the brain injury plus whatever's happening. I don't know. Like they're hard ass guys. And then I don't know. I guess so.
Yeah. No, I mean,
like if I don't play a role in this, then I think it'll be more successful if I do. And then I played a role in it for like the next 10, 15, maybe almost 15 minutes. And then I got ketamine and then it was just like fucking started portaling through.
Oh my
space.
God. Fuck, dude.
We give ketamine for analgesia, for pain stuff.
Yeah.
And, usually it's like 50 to 100 migs. Like a big guy like me, I would probably just go 100. I think I got 100 migs IM in a muscle, injected just into the muscle. And then I got 50 IV once they had my saline lock in. Damn. And then they hooked up blood and put a pressure infuser on it so you don't have to hang it. And I was just, fucking in and out, and they had to move me down like these terraces that were like 10 to 15 feet tall. And they would vertically like hoist me down in this fucking litter because I had like a, it's a strapped thing you can in, drag. Yeah. It's a Skedco. You can, it was invented for elk meat out of the backcountry to drag it on the ground instead of carrying it. But anyway, I'm on that thing and they're fucking lowering me and hoisting me, and we're, there's like contact, and we're like in an area that is definitely within the sector of fire of the enemy. So there's,
I was
just
gonna
like,
say, when you say contact, you mean there are, is fire going on. It's a firefight.
Enemy, yeah. Enemy, like friendly and firefight going on. Those other guys on their side of the valley are just like getting their gun on. And then there's airstrikes coming in and they're all shooting mortars from our outpost, which was like a mile away. So I was out for all that until I think the ketamine started coming wearing off as I was about to be, we were in the landing zone area and the helicopter was coming. And I remember grabbing one of the teammates and like being like, I'm going to die, dude. And he was like, no, you're not. No, you're not. And he was like, being positive, which was what you should do, I guess. But I was just like,
which is what you probably trained him to do.
I was literally like, I was probably really close to just being dead. And even with that blood, and I could, I guess I could feel it, but the ketamine fucking warps all that shit really intensely. And, it was, I just remember that it's like, but that also tainted with ketamine, and I won't be doing ketamine recreationally ever, because it's like really fucking weird for me, because the first time I got it was that
scenario.
It's got
a little bit of a trigger point. Yeah, it's like,
but it's just really fucking weird, and it like imprints things in your vision, and it kind of stretches moments out. So yeah, it was pretty weird.
Oh, that's fucking wow. Well, enough about you. Let's talk. All right. We get it now.
But I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be on High and Mighty.
I'm grateful for you to be here with us. Thank you for your service. The fucking, seriously, thank you. And we're lucky to have had you before, and we're even luckier to still have you with us, brother. So I'm hyped on that. Welcome to StockX, the only live marketplace for what's now and what's next. I am wildly unhip, but thanks to StockX, I can see what the cool new trends are and also purchase them. So whether it's the latest sneakers, apparel, electronics, collectibles, trading cards, a little more in your old man's wheelhouse right there, everything on StockX is brand new and 100% verified authentic. With StockX, you have the power to shop millions of hard-to-find or sold-out products at their true market value. Discover products that are on trend and ahead of trends by shopping on StockX. That's what I do a lot. Every once in a while, I end up buying an item, but I do mostly just surf just to see what kind of stuff is cool and out there. Download the app or sign up online and start buying and selling in a few easy clicks. Start shopping at StockX.com. StockX.com. This summer, Bespoke Post is here to take your adventures to the next level with a new lineup of must-have Box of Awesome collections. Bespoke Post partners with small businesses and emerging brands to bring you the most unique goods every month. Dude, I got a knife in mine. I went with the Terra Box, which is, for outdoorsy type stuff, tame nature, whatnot. I'm so hyped. I got this great hunting knife. I don't hunt, but I am a camper, so it is cool to add that to my collection. So no matter what you're into, Box of Awesome has you covered, from travel and outdoor gear, to breezy summer styles, and grooming goods. Always important. Box of Awesome has collections for every part of your life. I'm going with, I want Terra, or I want, there's another outdoorsy one, which name is escaping me, that I also like. Trail. Trail is another cool box. But hey, take a look at Bespoke Post boxes, and you'll be able to figure out for yourself which one appeals to you the most. Okay? So to get 20%, here's the thing. Take a quiz at boxofawesome.com. Your answers will help them pick the right Box of Awesome for you. New boxes every month across a ton of different categories. It's free to sign up, and you can skip a month or cancel anytime. Each box costs only $45, but has over $70 worth of gear inside. Get 20% off your first monthly box when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and enter the code MIGHTY at checkout. That's boxofawesome.com, code MIGHTY, for 20% off your first box. Even for the most narcissistic personal reasons, which is something you and I have been kind of going back and forth on in DMs, is there's like random groundswell movements every once in a while from like 20 podcast nerds that want me to play Marvel's Hercules
because
I kind of look like the way he's drawn now, and everyone's always like, give him the Kumail training regimen. I'm like, no, you don't understand. Hercules has to be masked. We have to have masks. So I'm like constantly like, Justin, wouldn't you want to blah blah blah? And so then I thought something that could be fun for our time would be like, let's talk a little like if you were trying to prescribe me a 39-year-old, 40-year-old man. A chance to get as like, my current training regimen is like, I lift 2 to 3 days a week, compound movements. I do like one day, it all varies because I just like whatever I have time for. I have a Peloton I'll do every once in a while. So that's kind of like my old man exercise regime that I've been liking because it's constantly varied and it keeps me on my toes. But if I were to say like, hey, you have a shot at Hercules in 1 year, I don't think I would be doing this program. So I started trying to think like it would be sort of like a power building program in a way. But let's talk through a little bit what you would prescribe me, because there would be some, we would want to keep mass, but we would have to get a little Marvel movie star,
right?
You know.
And so one of the first things, and this is kind of the general approach, but it applies to you as the individual, is that we look at what the current adaptation is, the current activity level. We take into account like all of the person's just information, like a history, like their health and what they're, so you have goals and needs, and then you have like where they're at and how many times a week they're working out, but also like age plays a huge role in that, especially for dudes. And so where your current activity level is now, I wouldn't want to like throw that into like the Henry Cavill 6 days a week or some bullshit or whatever he's doing for The Witcher. You wouldn't just like jump into like an insane thing. So there, and then also, like if you had the role, then I'm sure you'd be like, all right, boom, like the commitment is 100%.
Yeah, I have the time. I can shave some work stuff off because I'm making some money.
That incentive isn't there, we have to influence the behavior change to turn over to like be like, this is how it is now, instead of
I'm training for a very specific event. This event just happens to be a 16-week movie shoot rather than a rugby season or a powerlifting meet. Yeah.
So based on what you're doing, the approach is correct, but there's some things around the fringes outside of the training that can immediately be addressed, which is like dietary stuff. Well, let me back up. Before all that, as a 39-year-old who is going to pretend, if this was like a reality, I would be like, you probably want to go on like a TRT dose, like get a good endocrine doc and maybe get some like growth hormone precursors or whatever, because that stuff will help you metabolize easier, and you'll supplement that with a good nutritious diet. And we'll talk about that in a second, but that like the hormonal situation can be influenced by supplements and like food and everything, and sleep especially. But to give them and I'm not even saying like do a real cycle, but like obviously in Hollywood, that's what happens. Like when Tom Hardy played Bane, like he had the back knee hardcore because he was fucking roided and bloated because of the regime, right?
Like, yeah, look at the foreheads of all of our favorite buff action stars from the 80s and 90s. Look at their foreheads now. They definitely were on some sauce.
And
Sly
Sylvester
got caught
Stallone's
with it in Australia.
Nose,
yeah.
And his nose is like the size of his fucking, his old forehead from the Rocky days. I would legitimately consider a neuroendocrine program like that. And it doesn't have to be like something that you stay on forever, but... But one of the things that can help with that is just getting a blood test first, and that you can do that at like any clinic or your own per someone's doctor can. But there's also clinics that just do blood tests. But I would get like a full CBC, complete blood panel. But I'd get like the hormones done, vitamin D, the lipid profile, because all of those things are good pieces of information of like what the state of your system is. And so if your testosterone's low and your free test is low, and then you would want to make sure you get estradiol and then sex binding globulin hormone, I think. You just want to make sure you get all those because it just tells more of a picture. And then if you have that stuff up front and you're like, ooh, these are like low and I can see that, then when you go to that, whoever it is, if it's like an endocrinologist or like that weird random guy who will be like 70 years old on steroids with dick pills. And he's just like, I just want everyone to know what this feels like. And so he's the doctor that helps guys with that. Whatever, regardless of the choice, like if you have that data, then they will know how to steer that. And I would want someone that is like going to approach the holistic health appropriately. But
yeah,
so that's a consideration. And like if someone's doing
luckily,
a
Luckily, I live
Hollywood
in Los Angeles and there are a lot of doctors that walk that line of like, look, I don't want you to, you know, have issues down the road, but I think we can zhuzh the system here a little bit. And, you know, just there's just so many like men's health clinics. And I think the gay community definitely, you know, I live in West Hollywood. The gay community definitely helps keep doctors who care about keeping men virile and buff into their late years like that. And my doctor is a buff older gay man, and he's constantly like, we are working on my hormone profile with some clomiphene and shit like that right now. Dude, nothing, because I just needed like some zhuzhing, nothing too bad. Yeah,
if you haven't been on that for a while, it usually gives people like a really intense, emotionally difficult period where like pissed off and shit. So if you ever noticed anything like that when you started it for me, it took for like a month, I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, why is everything so shitty? And then it kind of balanced out. And then I was like, then my girlfriend, who's a doctor, was like, I'm pretty sure that's one of the side effects. And then we looked it up and it was. Oh. I was just like, it just was like, I was like irritable all the time. But so the hormone situation, that's a consideration, but you can influence that hardcore. And one of the best things that anybody can do for everything in their life, whether we're talking about physical, mental, emotional, whatever the fuck health, is sleep. And so
I want to jump in here, because I got to shout out Jeremy Fisher. He was the strength specialist coach at my gym, CrossFit South Brooklyn. He's the guy who saw me being a big, massive ex-offensive lineman doing really well in squat, press, bench, and really poorly in Fran. And was like, dude, yeah, I'm a power, like, you can take my programming. We do more powerlifting. He's like, oh, do you read 70s big? Because he would have told a story of pouring olive oil on a pizza. I forget which bodybuilder that was, but he would like order a large pizza and then they would pour a bottle of olive oil on it.
I think that was the guys from Elite FTS.
I think you are right. Yes.
I can't remember his name right now. He got weird a little bit as he got older. But
so shout out. I just want to shout out Jeremy Fisher for turning me on to you at the time. And then he did coach me all the way through my like I did your programming with him, his live coaching all the way through for my first powerlifting meet. And
sweet.
It was fucking dope. So back to and Jeremy's famous quote, the second most anabolic thing you could do for yourself is sleep.
I would say it's the most.
Anabolics.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. Fair. Yeah. Then I agree with him.
That was the gag. He's like, the first is gear. The second is getting 8 to 9 hours of sleep every night.
Which is true, but it also, like, I mean, everything from your prefrontal cortex to having the REM sleep to consolidate memory and have better abstract thought, like emotions improve, neurochemical stuff improves. So not only chemicals in the brain, but hormones in the body all get better. Even insulin sensitivity improves. And so it's just a total, like you could name a part of your body and I could figure out a way to explain how sleep is going to help it. Skin, your fucking wiener being harder for sex, or like having
your gut, your actual body, like your fitness level, like sleeping more repairs, you get a more repair. It's the old gag we used to say too, is like, if you're getting 9 hours of sleep, it's also 9 hours you're not eating. Like, you know, you only got 15 hours left to eat. So like if you're only getting 4 hours of sleep, you got 20 hours to eat and you're only getting 4 hours of sleep.
And since we're on the High and Mighty podcast, if you're consuming cannabis, if you have higher dose stuff later in the night, that can fuck with the deep sleep. Deep sleep occurs, excuse me, in the first half of the night, and REM sleep occurs in the second half. And they both stimulate the production of different hormones that will help you improve your body, but also like gain muscle or recover and shit like that. So they're two separate processes, and REM sleep is dependent on good deep sleep. So if you have high dose stuff, like if someone was dabbing or ripping bongs, like really
or
late,
eating like 100 milligram edible or tincture before bed to help go to sleep. Right?
Yeah. And I have I have a whole article about like cannabis and anxiety, but like the dose response relationship to what you were just kind of alluding to is important, that like if five, depending on the person, because that their tolerance is going to affect that. But like if someone is having like 5 to 20 mg to fall asleep, and that is enough, and then but they have 100 mg. So if X is enough, then why would you need 5X?
Right.
And so like the dose response relationship can influence that, because with cannabis, we can reasonably assume, based on the endocannabinoid system and all this bullshit, is that if you're oversaturating it and giving it too much, just like with anything being too much, that it would be not as good as if you had it dialed into what
right
that
amount.
Good
yeah.
dose response relationship is. But anyway, so high dose shit before bed will kind of fuck with sleep. I use it to fall back asleep, and I can, since I've like kind of reduced my tolerance, I only smoke like once or twice a week now, but I use a vape thing to fall back asleep. But when you're talking about the entourage effect earlier, obviously getting those ancillary those ancillary cannabinoids can facilitate sleep, like CBD and THC together. Those all endocannabinoids leverage each other in ways that they wouldn't if one of them was absent. Yeah. And then furthermore, the better shit, like the organic no-till soil-based or shit that's grown, will be a healthier plant, have those terpenes to express those cannabinoids. And so all of that shit is the entourage effect. It's not only just the you know, the presence of CBD and or G or C or N or whatever the fuck.
It's the limonene, all the terps inside of there. My stonery meathead friends and I have been discussing is cutting off getting high a little earlier in the evening now, rather than like smoking right before bed, like that one last blunt or something, because you want to have those dreams back. And as we're getting older, we're learning a lot. And as research goes on, we're learning a lot about the deep sleep, what it does for cognitive brain function in like the long term. So you don't want to fuck with your sleep. I am getting 8 to 9 hours, but how you can improve the quality of your sleep as well. So would you recommend me maybe quit cutting off cannabis a little, like, you know, like having a feeding window where it's
right.
Like,
I think
3 hours before bed, I'll stop so that I'm processing it enough that I can.
I think that that is definitely something that will work in anybody's favor regarding their sleep. And if you had a way of like, nobody needs this, but like someone you might be interested in this, a biometric device, like an Oura Ring or something. That's what I use. It's a really great sleep tracker, not a good activity tracker, but it can give you things like heart rate variability and what your resting heart rate is for that night of sleep. And so then you can track it. Because then you would have actual data, like if I smoke before bed, then it did this to my sleep. And then you would know. But if it's like, oh, that one, that strain right there didn't have as much an effect because like maybe the THC was under 10% and that CBD was like above 8%. And that one helped me. And that one actually helped my heart rate variability. Then you would just have data. And so like that device was interesting with that.
I have a Fitbit. I think it tracks sleep, this one.
It's not as good as the Ring. Just wrist heart rate bullshit is hard, especially with heart rate variability, because heart rate variability is like when you have a QRS wave and like a heartbeat, like blimp, blimp, on the fucking printout in the movie. like in Batman where Harvey is like, Rachel! He's got the thing on his finger. Anyway, what the fuck am I talking about? Oh, the QRS wave. The heart rate variability is the measurement in between those heartbeats. So that's like really finite bullshit to measure. And so the wrist stuff to get like the artery, your radial or
dial
artery,
in on that.
Just doesn't work well. So to circle back to talk about this training shit, like sleep is really important. And yes, cutting out the cannabis within a few, 3 hours is probably good, but you could have like a time of day, like if you have a normal bedtime, but that'll help. But if cannabis is interfering with your circadian rhythm, that would definitely be a reason to adjust the cannabis intake, because circadian rhythm is what regulates all of your hormones. And there's a classic story of like, if you're trying to reset your circadian rhythm, get in the sun right when you wake up, which is really easy in LA. So like right when you wake up, even if you spend like 5 minutes outside, you're getting that light in and it's stimulating things properly. So maintaining a good bedtime and wake time, like if they're regular, that'll help kind of sync things up also. So we talked about hormones and maybe supplementing hormones. We talked about sleep, because that will help with all those hormones and the brain stuff. We talked about cannabis with sleep. Now let's talk about the training.
Yeah.
So the training compound movements are good. With you, I think, given your whatever your body fat level is and what you're trying to go for body fat wise, I'd probably have you still do the same types of things, but I would have you do them in like supersets. So I'll give you an example. There's a program that I run right now, and I'm going to write a short book on this one. But so this is the premiere, but the workout.
And if you're listening to this episode months after it's come out for whatever reason, just see if the book is out and fucking buy it. Let's just say, I don't know, but buy if anything this guy fucking puts out. Oh, trust
I appreciate
me.
That. Yeah. If it's not out, then harass me to get it out.
Yeah, but, then tweet at him.
there's a workout. It's essentially like three workouts, but the first two are going to be some sort of pressing movement, a pulling movement, and a leg movement. And you can choose whatever the fuck you want with those. But the two workouts are going to be vertical pressing and pulling or horizontal pressing and pulling. So when I do like the vertical one, I'm going to do a press and I deadlift because I can't squat with my prosthetic situation. But so press, deadlift, pull-ups or chin-ups, so some sort of vertical pulling, and that's that workout. But I do all three of those in one set and then rest. And so circuit training in general is something that is going to increase your metabolic demand and fatigue your muscles in a little bit different way. And you don't need as heavier loads, but circuit training is also something that can maintain or build lean body mass, especially if the hormonal environment is supporting that, which we addressed with supplementation of hormones potentially. I didn't sleep get into nutrition, but good nutrition, like basically something like paleo with the appropriate macros is going to support the hormones. So with that kind of environment, when you do certain types of training, usually people will have better hypertrophy or muscle growth. Yeah. And so having rep ranges that reflect that in the sets and then the number of sets and then doing them without rest, but I like how it kind of varies the body parts. So you're not like just fatiguing your arms because you like, if you do a press and then you move to deadlift, you're like, well, now working a different part of your body. But for you, that's going to be more of an elevated of your metabolism than if you had done all those things fucking separately.
Right.
Because usually in a normal strength workout, you'd like do all your sets of press and then you would do all your sets of deadlift and then all your pull-ups and your accessory bullshit. But
that's so funny right now. And like, and this has got to be because I've been, and it's kind of common sense based on our functional strength backgrounds, but like my current, like I just have AB workouts at the gym right now because I'm getting there so infrequently. I mean, not infrequently, but like 2 days a week. Mm-hmm. So I just have squat, press, chin, and then and supersetting, pressing, and chinning. And then the other day is deadlift, bench, ring rows, and then supersetting, benching, and ring rows. But I'm okay, liking nice. This idea of also putting the leg movement in there because I'm not pushing weight right now because I am building back up a little bit. And this mm-hmm. feels like a great way to like this is just not something I thought of because I've been so anti sort of Metcon because of CrossFit, but looking at it like just old school circuit training where yeah. it's like, oh yeah, because I'm squatting 185 right now as I build back up. And it's like, I could probably jump to a bar and press right after that and then bang it. Like I could probably without being like, yes, so I'm not going to hit too. My old numbers anyway. Like,
yeah. That's what I was going to get to is that A, you're 39.
Exactly.
B, and like, unless someone's competing or something, but it doesn't really fucking matter what the weight is.
Right.
Because what matters is more so the effect that you're getting and not getting hurt. Because if you were to do something that like, even if it's a minor tweak and it prevents you from doing more of that thing, then for the purpose of like this goal of playing Hercules, then it interferes with it. Or just for the sake of you trying to be jacked and tan or whatever is that it just is now delaying that.
Also important for me. Thank you.
Because what we need is something that is because the reason those Metcons are valuable or like high intensity conditioning works is because it brings your metabolic demand. It spikes it with these intense periods of work. And then it's either continuous until you finish the workout or it's like interval where you have that period of rest and the intensity comes back down and then it goes back up. And so you can do all those with either max intensity, which you don't need to, but that's like kind of what CrossFit is, or like moderating your intensity. So that's kind of what the lifting thing does is it gives you a certain amount of intensity. It's not going to like your heart rate will get up. It'll have a spike for the three sets, but it's not going to fatigue you significantly. It's not going to be injurious because you wouldn't pick the loads to be. You wouldn't pick too much weight anyway.
Right, right.
But so that is the first part of the workout. And then you can do a second part of the workout. And that can be a conditioning workout. Or it can just be more exercise. Like I'll do like arm stuff. And then I might ride the bike. I have an assault bike. And then assault bike shit is easy because you can just ride continuous if you're feeling
Tabata
fancy, then you can
or,
do like, you can 30 do 30 on, 30s, 30s on 30 off seconds, or you can do 1 minute on 1 minute off or whatever fucking interval. It doesn't matter. And you can think of it as like light, medium or high intensity. And you can just one easy way is just to go high, low, and whatever the time frame, it doesn't fucking matter. Cause you're just doing something.
Right.
And,
right.
So the combination of the working most muscle you can in the actual lifting, plus something that is getting a metabolic demand, that's a good combo. And you can do that in like sometimes when I do the tri-set thing that I just described, whether it's, and you're pretty much doing the same split, I can complete that with rest in like 15 to 20 minutes, you know, like I just do one set and like, then all the sets of one of the of each exercises are over, you know, like,
right.
So you do 3 to 5 sets of that. And then, you're getting enough dose to get the response of adaptation that you want, assuming the hormonal environment will support it. So that's what nutrition, hydration, sleep will do.
Justin, as you're talking in my head, tell me if this is like a good, cause you just like triggered a potential program for myself. Cause I was like, that's kind of perfect for me right now. Cause it'll, and then if I want to eventually get into like, let's push fives and see how high up I can get my sets of five or whatever, that can happen down the line. But for now, I'm thinking like based just 8 to 12 reps, three sets of this tri-set thing you're talking about. And I'm like, oh, I'll press, squat, chin, rest. Press, squat. And then the other day I'll be like, I'll bench, dead, ring row, and rest. And then I was thinking and then have some sort of conditioning workout at the end, whether it's monostructural or some sort of like, LSD, like, you know, I'll just ride the bike for 20 minutes while I watch an episode of blank or whatever, you know, just something, I'll do some sort of like, cardio adjacent or conditioning thing. But then I'm thinking like in the middle, maybe a sort of beach muscle, or if it's the movie, a Hercules muscle, sort of like superset where it's like, oh, I'll do like heavy shrugs and then hammer curls. Or
so you're very good at giving me segues, because it's almost where I was going to go anyway. But then, so that's two workouts, right? And two workouts is fine for fitness and kind of just doing health stuff. But if you're training for this role, or you're trying to like have a deliberate drop in body fat, then you need a little more. So those are 2 days that you can do at the gym. Part of the problem with like behavior change or just adherence to training is getting to the fucking gym and the time, or like my fucking how I feel. I don't feel like it. But getting there is important. So if you just go there twice, but then you have maybe something, because I assume the Peloton's at home.
Yeah.
So you got the Peloton at home, and then I don't know. Nice. And I don't know if you have like...
For the listeners, it's 7 inches from my shoulder because I live in a tiny ass Los Angeles apartment.
And then I don't know if you have like a kettlebell or...
I got some dumbbells, kettlebells, bands. Yeah.
Dumbbells. And if you have bands, now here is the next part of the program, because there's a third day, which can be extended to a fourth day, which is you're going to do days at home. So like if you are working it from home a lot, or you're just fucking lazy, or you didn't want to go to the gym, or if you already knocked those gym days out and it's like coming up on the weekend, like you can do a quick 15, no more than 30 minute workout just with bands. And so like, here's an example of the band workout that I would do. It's sort of like an upper body pump, but it's not fatiguing. And so it's a really low stress day, but it gets a lot of muscle action into essentially what a pump is driving blood into the muscles. And that helps maintain lean body mass, but it can build it. Anyway, it's essentially body.
And it helps with confidence and makes you want to get it. It's a good, as someone with a very addictive personality, it's a fun thing to get addicted to.
It's like coming in the gym.
Like when I'm at the gym, it's like I'm coming.
So I would, I have bands. I have this thing, it's called crossover symmetry, but you can get any bands that have like a handle of some sort, or you can make all this shit if you got like really cheap bands. But I've got it like hooked up to my door where there's one coming from the ground and there's one coming from like chest height. Crossover symmetry is like a prehab for like shoulder stuff. It's really good, but it's kind of expensive. So you typically see in like collegiate strength places or commercial gyms and shit. But so it's a good program or a good product, but you don't need that one. So I would basically use the bottom bands and do a vertical press, something that is like I can do 8 to 12 reps, and it's not going to be, you don't ever want bands to be fatiguing anyway. You're trying to focus on the contraction, that whole mind muscle thing. It's kind of dumb, but like the more awareness you have of how it feels, then the better muscle action there is from a bodybuilding perspective. But also,
bro,
if you're high and doing that.
I put that shit off for so long when I was a kid. Cause you know, I'm probably a few of my listeners and like company here. I was reading Muscle and Fitness magazine when I was in like ninth grade. Like, and I was just like obsessed with these guys, and they would always talk about the mind muscle connection. And I would be a little just 90s little rude sort of like, what is this whacked bullshit? And then like when I was in college, I like worked out with this dude who was kind of like also really like informed. And he was like, hold your tricep while you do like one arm, and like hold your bicep while you do one, and connect. And I started to like be like, I see what he's saying. Now I'm like, the mind muscle connection is real. And now I'm also a stoner, so it's like you fuck around.
No,
with
but
the
it
bands
helps though.
On where you're like, oh, you're doing like TU, like just trying to get time under tension in a way.
Yeah.
You can have a lot of fun with it.
So you got the right idea. So essentially, it was a press and then a chest fly. I'm standing doing a chest fly. And then I would drop and do like the same number of push-ups. So if I was doing 10s, then I would do 10 of each one of those. And then I would rest. And that's the first part. The second part is like the crossover symmetry rehab thing. So it's a lot of different movements that are essentially the scapular back and down. And it's like reverse flies, but also
reverse
just
flies,
other
face pulls and
other
like,
angles and shit like that. But it's a series of exercises. It was like, I think 8 total. And then there's also some stuff to stretch the external rotators and kind of contract the anterior part of the shoulder girdle, like the serratus, which is the superhero, blah, 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 like finger ripples on the on the ribs. So then I would do that. And then the next thing, so that's like second part of this pump workout. And then the last part is just like a bi-tri superset, where whenever you have, you'd always keep both hands up. In other words, both elbows contracted so that you always have tension on the biceps. So if one arm is working, doing all the reps for the set, the other one is still contracted, which, by the way, to reference him the second time, I got that from Henry Cavill's fucking Witcher routine. I just watched it. I was like, I want to see what he's doing for this role.
Dude's got a fucking body, man. He challenged my, what I thought was 100% confident heterosexuality. He challenged it in fucking Mission Impossible. He looked fucking great. The mustache, the hand to hand. I was just like, oh, okay, maybe, sexuality is a spectrum. I get it, because I'm attracted to this man. And then put a fucking sword in his hand for fucking old D&D boy. Like, that shit hits even harder. Now I'm watching The Witcher, and I'm like, okay, yeah.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And he's like a sweet guy. Like, he's just such a nice man. If you follow him on social media, he's just a good
guy. I've watched him work out, and I've watched him put together his gaming PC. So this guy has two things that I am huge fans of and have watched strangers do. So I'll look at Cavill and be like, oh, yeah.
But he got good advice. He did RDLs a lot. He did good compound movements, and he got good nutrition advice, because it doesn't really look like he was on any juice. I think he's just like a committed gent. But so going back to that pump workout, it was some upper body shit, especially like a bunch of pressing stuff, and then a bunch of pulling stuff, and then a bunch of arm stuff. And sometimes I'll do that up to 2 times a week. If I can't do the lifting, because if I can't walk in my legs, or it's not a good idea to like do anything on my legs, or I'm just lazy or don't want to go out there in the garage, then I would do these band workouts sometimes like 2-3 times a week. And so it's, you think of like how you can make have a full body effect, right? Pressing, pulling, and then leg movement. For like you at home, if you had the kettlebell swing, you could, you know, throw swings in with any of those things, do 10 swings in between. Or like between every phase of your workout, do 20 to 30 swings. Or if you can make the swings more conditioning oriented, that'll always help you. Or don't use the bell, just do walking lunges. Like, you'll get sore as shit in the beginning from that, but like just simple things that are going to get you work. Like a Bulgarian split squat and walking lunges are amazing. Those are like really great, essentially injury preventative based exercises that'll help with your stability, because you're doing them. It's a single leg stuff.
Yeah.
So any kettlebell shit is great. So like, you essentially have, you get a handful of workouts that like, you get 2 or 3 workouts you can do in the gym, and you get like maybe 1 to 2 or maybe 3 workouts you can do at home. Cause for you, you could just Peloton. That's it.
Right.
It could be easy Peloton just to wake up and get blood flowing, or it could be intense, high intensity Peloton, like doing one of the classes. That could be one of yours. You can have a band workout, and then you can have a kettlebell workout, and then you can have a mixed one. So the point is, you make a hopper. not like a CrossFit hopper, but you basically have the workouts, and then you're like, based on how I feel, how much time I have, and whatever the fuck is going on in my life, which one of these am I up for today?
And that's kind of how I've been running it for like the for most of the quarantine, and then since the gyms have opened back up, it's been like that. And I'm like, some days I get 3 days at the gym, and then I just do 1 day. I'm down to 1 or 2 days. And what you're saying also is triggering me with more thought, because it's very scalable. Where now it's like, well, I got home from the gym. I'm it's week 5 of this program. I'll do the band workout 2 hours later. It's like, and then now I'm like, oh, now I have 8 workouts a week, but you know, they're like various degrees of intensity.
So now what I would see, now how I'd steer you is like, a certain amount in 7 days is going to be better than a lesser amount, you know? So what I would probably have you do is model it almost like that strength and conditioning program back in the day, but like your lifting days, like I would imagine you should approach it like, okay, day one and two, I'm going to work out. And then day three is my off day where I don't have to worry about it. So I can, if you wanted to like, whether you're going to do something for your body or kind of fuck off, then that's fine. Yeah. But if you're like out of the 7 days, it doesn't have to be on these days of the week and you can add in rest days. It's always fine too. But if I had to give it days to give you an idea, I'm saying like lift on Monday and then band work on Tuesday, Wednesday off. But band work can also be your Peloton, kettlebell, whatever. Yeah. It can be your lighter workout. So it's almost like heavy, light, rest day, heavy, light. So like Mondays and Thursdays would be your lifting days and Tuesdays and Fridays would be your random days. And then Saturday morning could be like a pump session. But that's what, so then you get like three pump sessions in a week and then but you still have some of the strength training.
Yeah.
And then all that is done in a way that is like maintaining, like promoting the metabolism going up in the session, but then keeping it elevated after the session with kind of those intensity bouts. So it's kind of taking some of the benefit you get from doing the Metcons, but not abusing your body and doing them too much and being too stressful by just going balls to the wall every day. So it meters you down. In other words, it keeps you from doing too much because you're only going to do gym stuff 2 or 3 days a week. Because when people get into like, yeah, I work out like, you know, 5 days a week. And I'm like, like every day of the week? And they're like, yes. And I'm like, well, stop. Like, don't do that. But varying it, you know, undulating your stress is always a good approach, especially when you're late 30s and getting into 40s. Because I know that you probably noticed when you hit 30, it was way different when you were 25.
Yes.
And 35 is different than 30. I'm 35 now.
I'll tell you the hardest, the biggest wake up call was I couldn't work out hungover anymore in my 30s. I couldn't bring myself. In my 20s, I could fucking play in a fucking 80-minute rugby match, still drunk from the night before. But it just, at like on my 31st birthday, a switch just flipped. Uh-oh. Yeah. The entourage effect. A switch just flipped where I was like, And then in my late 30s, if I get like real drunk, something I don't do that frequently, I feel like I lose motivation for the gym for like a long weekend. It's such a fucking weird thing that it does to me.
Because half an ounce of alcohol takes like an hour to metabolize. So if you end up having like 10 ounces of alcohol, that's 20, that's at least 20 hours of it just fucking getting processed in your body.
Right. And that's your body the residual using energy to do that. Oh, yeah. Fuck. Yeah.
So, one of the things, if someone is going to drink with their high and mighty approach, then I would recommend some sort of electrolyte, replenishment thing that doesn't necessarily have carbs. Cause when you have some of that before bed, like I have noticed anecdotally with not only myself and others that when they have a very good electrolyte thing before bed, not only can it help sleep just in general for a pothead, but like if someone drank, it helps them rehydrate because the main problem from drinking is the dehydration and the poison in the brain, of course. But
yeah, shout out to the producers of Drunk History who do send you home with they put a few electrolyte shots in you before they let you go home.
Nice.
Yeah, and they watch you for a half hour, walk you to your door. They do everything right. But that was the first time I was like, she's like, the EMT is like, have charcoal before and there's electrolytes after. And I'm like, like, okay, take a shot of activated charcoal, drink a bottle of Casamigos, have two electrolytes, eat some Taco Bell, and see you in the morning, baby. Yeah.
And then wake up with some electrolytes and then balance that with water the next day. But that's like some I like throwing pothead tips in whenever I do like a cannabis based show.
Yeah,
because you can it's like mitigating the damage. So like if you were going to eat dirty because you're high and you're like, I'm gonna fucking just crush, you can have a digestive enzyme, and that'll, like, if you're having lactose from milk or cheesecake or whatever, the ice cream and shit, like having a digestive enzyme that has lactase in it, and then lipase, which breaks down fat, amylase, which breaks down carb, protease, that breaks down protein. Like if you're going to have like fucking ribs and ice cream and cause you're high and it's going to be awesome, then you can mitigate that with the digestive enzyme. So, cause that'll help that shit break down and not fuck your gut up. But then B, all those actual macros are then going to be utilized instead of like sometimes it doesn't work like that. And you poop a lot of it out when you get too much shit in, or it's just inflaming your gut. So
yeah, your body can't like soak that much. Like how you piss out, like when you take a multi and you piss yellow, and it's like
the water soluble shit. Once you're topped off, the water soluble stuff just gets pissed out.
Yeah.
So that's a way to mitigate damage. And then, but that's how I would have you approach the workout like that, where you're like, okay, I'm shooting for minimum 3, probably no more than 5 days a week of doing something. And if that only means, even if that means you don't go to the gym and you get Peloton 3 times a week and you get 2 pump sessions, then you win. If you get 3 sessions in a week, you win.
Right.
And all 3 of those can be cool as shit, because they can be while you're high, 15 minutes fucking just curling or whatever the fuck
right,
you wanted.
Right.
So, but that's the behavior change, trying to like kind of make it easy to like, oh, that's an easy step to make because I can do all this shit at home and it doesn't have to be very long. And you don't have to, obviously, like the muscle and fitness approach has tons of sets, tons of reps and shit. Granted, those are all advanced type lifters who are on tons of fucking drugs and shit. But, so having something that you can still progress the weight on, because you mentioned like I'll run like 8s or something. You can start with 6s and just do the first session, see how you like the first week. You can go to 8s and then 10s and then 12s. And then just if you want,
yeah,
you
then
can hang out.
Put another 20 pounds around. On, go to 6s.
Yeah, right. Or you can just go back to 6s and you just kind of start it over. It's kind of like 5-3-1 in that regard. 5-3-1 decreases the reps each week and makes the weight go up. So that one's good for just people who won't like – I have some good conditioning additions to that, which is going to be another book, by the way. But Snake PT, because I made it when I was in the course, Snake Eater, Green Beret shit. So it's going to be kind of like this was like how I trained for special operations type training. But 5-3-1 is a good program. We're just kind of reversing it for you in that we're trying to get no rest, hypertrophy-based rep ranges that are going to stimulate not only your musculature, but also your metabolism. But the 5-3-1 approach is something that keeps someone in check where they don't do too much volume and too much intensity. We kind of have that same thing built into this because like you're only lifting twice a week. You're not doing like the Texas method fucking right. 4 days a week or some shit. So yeah, that'd be how I approach it. And then the next time we talk, I can really hammer down on like your nutrition and we can like kind of parse through like, the main thing I would say is that you just want to try and make every snack and meal kind of like a balanced macro. So if you're having like those drinks or snacks or meals that are like really high carb and it's processed carb, then obviously that is the first thing to bring down. And I just wouldn't really drink sugar. If you don't drink sugar, that's a good approach.
That's the first pitch I always say to any friends who want to lose weight. I'm like, lose any liquid calories, like I can't give up coffee. Fine, give up everything but coffee. Like that's fine. Like that's, you don't have to drink it black. You can put, you know, tweak that as you need. But like if you're still drinking sodas as a grown-up, like you just have to give it up. Like
pretty much.
Like that you have to treat it like alcohol. You have to be like, I had a cherry coke at the movie theater this weekend and that's enough until like 6 weeks from now. Like that's like
those fucking big cups have so much sugar in them. We were on a TUI to like Georgia one time and we got sweet tea at a fucking like Mexican place, right? and the sweet tea was like, you know, like the water was like sitting on top of the sugar in there. Like it was just so potent that when I took a sip of it, I was like, I couldn't fathom drinking more than like several sips of that because it was just like boil my insulin out of my fucking nostrils. So the making macros balanced, always starting with a protein. If you kind of know the amount of protein in different amounts of meat that can help you, like an ounce of meat is roughly 6-7 grams of protein typically. So, you know, like 8 ounces, you're looking at somewhere around 40. So having the carbs be no more than like twice the amount of the protein. So like if you have 40 grams of protein roughly, then you try not to go above 80 grams of carbs. And that ratio is pretty good. And then you have a good fat. And that means the protein and the fat will kind of slow the absorption of the carbs and the hormonal effect is different. And then if these are clean sources of carbs like potatoes and shit like that, as opposed to just processed bullshit, then that's only in your favor. So having a good macro approach can damper the effect of the carbs. Or if you ever are going to be like, I'm going to have this dessert or I am going to have the fucking cherry coke at the movie theater, then you might be like, okay, let me have a fatty thing with it, which I don't know, you could have chocolate, I guess. But then you might have been like, okay, before I leave, I'm going to drink a protein shake.
Right.
Like a 40 to 50 gram protein shake. And then it'll sort of, it just mitigates the damage. It doesn't fix things.
Yeah.
And then one of the best things to do for nutrition stuff is to just do intermittent fasting. So
that's what I found in the quarantine. I was able to lock that in because outside pressures kind of, and that's how I couldn't break below 300 for a long time, even though I was like running half marathons and stuff. And then like you know, I was lying to myself a lot too, obviously, but in the last like couple of months, I've broken the 300 barrier. I'm broken the 290 barrier. I'm down in my 280s for the first time since I was competing as a powerlifter.
Yeah.
Like, and it's been, so it feels fucking great. And it's because I started practicing it by being like, it's so annoying to do three meals every day from home. So it's like, all right, well, let's just push the first one till later. And then I was like, ooh, now I like kind of working out, having not eaten. I never used to train fasted. Now I like it because I'm not going 2 hour squat sessions or whatever anymore.
You know,
so
it's just, like, sorry,
feels so fucking good. And then like having that first meal post workout always just feels so good. And you're like, then I'll eat another one and in less than 9 hours from now, and then not eat after that. And like, it feels it's like for me as a person who has like minimal self control, and like just not like, you know what I mean? And I just giving myself a window truly lets me just be like, okay, I don't fuck around outside.
I just talked to Rob Wolf yesterday.
So
we talked a little bit about this. But he emphasized two things that I think are really helpful, especially for intermittent fasting, because he teaches a lot of keto stuff. But keto is, and to review, keto is mainly not eating carbs to get into ketosis. But different types of people will have different demands for that. And my general recommendation is to steer people more towards intermittent fasting because it corrals their calories, it corrals their hormonal system, which we haven't dug into yet. But it also gives them the window, like you're saying. But one of the things for working out is to make sure you have electrolytes going into that session. And Rob has a product. I'm an ambassador for it. But the product, the electrolyte one, it works really well. But you can also go on just search Keto A, and they have like a free ingredient thing. Like if you're going to make a gallon of this shit, put this much sodium. And so they had that out forever before they made this product. But the point being that having some sort of electrolyte stuff with sodium – and a little bit of potassium, a little bit of magnesium going into your fasted workout, you'll probably feel pretty fucking awesome with that.
I've been drinking a BCAA and electrolyte mix.
Nice.
With water.
Are you during
workout? Yeah.
Are you counting the BCAAs as the start of your fasting? Like your fasting window is broke. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the first thing that I recall from talking to Rob is like electrolytes leading into it. And so BCAAs plus electrolytes is probably real nice for fasted stuff. And then the next thing is that when you're in an intermittent fasting scenario, you typically are eating fewer meals sometimes. And then to get the same calories as you did in the normal eating window takes effort. But typically what you find is that people are good with their carbs and their fat if they're balanced, but they're low on protein. So you might want to cheat more towards your protein oriented thing. Plus your activity level is about to slightly increase because of the program approach. And the more high intensity stuff you do up to three times a week, whether we're talking intervals on the Peloton or adding a little burner or sled thing or something at the end of one of your lifting sessions, or just getting on a bike after any of those, if you get those up to like three a week, that'll be good. So then your metabolic demand, all that bullshit's going to be higher. And so the window is smaller than it ever was before, and you're older than you ever were before.
Right.
So just cheat more towards more protein. And the more you can get all of those things from real food, the better.
Yeah.
You know, that's Rob's approach. But I
can't, I'm like, and I'm assuming you're similar. It's burned in my head. It's a habit I'll never get rid of, but I need a PWO every, like I have a shaker cup every time I go gym. I can't resist. I can't, you know, I do like greens, collagen, a little whey and a little fiber. It's a little more grown up than my old PWOs, but I can't not have one. It just feels like,
and that's okay. And then, the more that, so if you're having especially 20 grams of collagen and like a scoop of protein, that's kind of what I'll do is.
That's me. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's good because the collagen helps with all this stuff too. And it's also an anti-inflammatory and it just helps with a bunch of shit. So it sounds like you're on the right track. And so then what I imagine you doing is just fucking tightening your shot group with everything of what your approach is. So you have some mins and maxes for how many times a week you're going to train and how many lifting sessions you're going to do and how many conditioning sessions you're going to do. You can just think of it as like the gym workout and the home workout, because it doesn't have to be more complicated. Because then if you're like, fucking like this one and that one and that, just like you're either going to do a gym workout or a home workout. And can you do four or five of those a week? But if you get three, you win.
Right.
So there you go. So like, it's like, okay, I won. I was really busy this week, but I still got those three sessions and I still got a pump, and I tightened my shot group on my food. So like, that's the general approach. And then if you were like actually getting into like confirm this role is happening, then I would steer you more towards let's get regimented. You're going to be doing it more like a regular basis to really, cause your first thing is to really drive your body fat down. Mm-hmm. And then while you're doing that, especially if you had like hormonal supplementation, then you would
might
be
as well
like,
be putting on
your lean body mass could also be adjusting or kind of like going up as your body fat's coming down. But your main thing is we got to get the body fat down,
right?
First, because that's the thing that has been, because you have like a metabolic adaptation of that. So now you're like intermittent fasting is helping to kind of restructure your fucking hormonal milieu. And also your circadian rhythm.
Right,
so
right.
All of those things that we've been chatting about, like the sleep and nutrition and even hydration and the timing of cannabis can influence all these things. Like, you know, you might benefit from upping your vegetable intake. I don't know
I definitely would. I can objectively tell you that.
Here's a pothead tip. If you're in a situation where you're like, ah, fuck, I didn't eat any vegetables today. Just like... It sounds kind of gross, but I'm sure you've had worse shakes in your life. You just get water and just fucking put spinach in it and blend it up and then just
and
drink that
it.
With like, yeah, just like chug it and then it's gone. Cause then you don't have to deal with eating a bowl of salad. You can cook spinach down really well. Like in the pan, it cooks down.
With a little olive oil, a little lemon.
But then it requires like effort. And if like sometimes when you're high, you don't want to do that. And you're like, yeah, I don't know. You know how
I'll tell you what I did last night, Justin, to tell you how I've grown. I made myself chicken wings, baked them myself. And when I realized I just made a plate, my wife's not home, so I just made a huge plate of wings for myself. I'm like, I have 28 wings on a plate. This is disgusting. I should have some vegetables. I go in the fridge. I have baby kale. I just take a bunch of it out, put it on my plate, and go sit down. Then I realize I don't even have a fork, and I'm like, you know what? I really want to eat these wings. I just take a huge handful of kale, jam it in my mouth, chew it like a kid, like, done. I ate my vegetables, and then I had 28 wings and fucking kick back and watch Fast 7.
Nice. You just watched Fast 7 last night and when you woke up, it sounds like.
Oh, I finished it this morning. I fell asleep after that many wings.
but that's a good tempering to, obviously, it's like the Force or even like the Ring in Lord of the Rings, like being a pothead or just cannabis
in
general.
See, Justin, another reason why I've been following you for 15 years is you're also low-key a dork.
Dude, I just reread Lord of the Rings. It was so awesome reading it now that I have consumed cannabis and also been in war. Because Tolkien has all these like, he has all these references that just don't really mean anything to you when you haven't experienced it. But like when he's like, things will never be the same after this in the world, but also like with individuals like Frodo after he gets stabbed on Weathertop.
Yeah, it's changed
like,
forever, yeah.
Like so it's just, I don't know, it was the way he wrote and he's very eloquent and there's a lot of great little things he sprinkles in that when I read him, I was just like, oh, fuck. But what the fuck?
Now you're going to make me reread it. I think you just fucking
you
hit
should.
A little inspo. Yeah.
I might do a book club soon and then... It would be, we can chat about it, but it's fantastic. And it was very cool reading it on this side. And the hobbits are basically us, dude. They fucking smoke and eat and just drink a little bit. And they like, they just want to hang out and not really have anything be hard.
Yeah. It's a real aspirational life watching the hobbits. You're like, oh, they're right. They are right. Like,
right.
In like now I'm an adult and I realize what I want in life. And I just want like the outdoors, my family and some cannabis. Like, that's
you express the love and connection in the universe. And you just enjoy it along the way. Cause I can confirm for you from fucking feeling like I died as a self and almost physically died that the real value in all this bullshit is to enjoy it. And to have a sense of humor about it. And like I like to every now and then get a little high and get a bunch of snacks and I put on the fucking Shire music.
No, dude.
I'm just like, and I'm in the mountains, you know, I'm in my mountains and the pine trees are outside. I just imagine kind of being in a hobbit hole with all my plants and shit. And like,
hell yeah, dude, I hope you're successful enough someday that like when you have that rich guy man cave thing, yours is like a little tiny circular door in a hillside.
Oh,
and you go
that's
in
a
there
good idea.
And you can fucking work in there and
you
shit.
You think the Gary
like-
Sinise Foundation will put that in for me when they if they build me a home? I'm Gary
Sinise.
I'm like,
I
request this door on this particular room, and this will be a hutch over here, and it's like a hutch for this peace pipe is gonna sit in the hutch, you know? Like
I want a fucking like forest weed man cave so bad.
You know, I've gotten into, my girlfriend is a plant girl, and she loves plants and has tons. She has like over 100 of them. So I have a bunch of plants now.
Dude, now my wife runs a floral company over Instagram. Can we talk about how fucking connected you and I are?
Yeah. I'm like, I want to look at it now.
I've been low-key chasing you my whole life, it seems like, by accident.
But I just got into the plant thing and like taking care of them. So I'll have to check your wife's stuff out, because I think I've seen it a little bit. But yeah, I'll look at it. But that's hard to keep certain things growing up here in the dry ass mountains.
Fuck, I believe. Yeah, I live in the fucking desert. It's a hard thing to just live here, no less grow shit here.
Yeah.
Justin, I want to say, I don't want to take up any more of your time, man, but thank you for doing this podcast. Thank you for doing everything you've done. And thank you for your service, of course. And anything you want to like plug, tell people to check out. And I highly recommend listeners check out 70s Big, read the archives if they're still out there. A lot of great articles. I've never given up croc rows because of you guys. Croc rows are one of my beach muscle workouts. Like, I imagine Hercules would have a thick back, so I've been bringing the croc rows back.
He would.
Yes, he would.
he needs to, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So 70s Big is, I'm about to kind of revitalize a little bit. So I'm looking into like subscription type stuff because I don't get tons of disability compensation. So I need to start kind of earning
gotta
some
find a
money
job.
Again. Yeah, and I can't work because I can't fucking go anywhere. Sometimes I can't walk. So I'm starting a Patreon. I'll probably do one for 70s Big very soon in the next month. But on my personal side, it's going to be oriented towards like kind of cultivating a community with compassion and critical thinking and improving wellness and emotional health oriented, but also like being able to have a place where we have mature discussions about ideas instead of the normal bullshit on the internet where people are meh, and like where the trolls and the bots can come in and really stir things up with people, but kind of like just cultivating compassion and critical thinking. So I'm starting a subscription thing. If that doesn't work out, then I'll have to flex or evolve into other things. But I'm actually releasing that today on the 18th of June, because this is the day that I walked 2 years ago.
Yeah,
so, so that Patreon is the main thing. But like, if the podcast will remain free, I don't have sponsors or anything for it, and it's growing. But you know, my attention is more on it because I enjoy it and I'm not depressed. So I'm gonna be doing more shit for that, doing some more writing. So I'll have little products coming out, but like 70s Big will. Once this subscription thing is out for the personal stuff, it's called Project Little Steps, by the way.
Oh, I like it. Project Little Steps.
Last thing is like the day after I got blown up, when I woke up and two of my teammates that saved my life were there, I was like, yeah, blah, 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 blah. You just got to put one foot in front of the other, even if you ain't got any. And I was doing that on March 6th, dude. Like, I made that probably every 3 minutes because you have no short-term memory on ketamine.
Goldfish memory at that point, yeah.
But, so the justinlasic.com is where people can find most shit, and it's or 70sbig.com, 70sbig.
Yeah, check the show notes of this episode. The links will be there, so you could just click through and get on them that way. And I'm sure you'll see me and Justin talking and retweeting this tweet when it's about, when it's out, so you could follow Justin, follow 70s Big, get back out there, people. Justin, this meant a lot to me, dude. This is like thank you very much, man.
Yeah,
glad,
I appreciate
I'm
you.
I'm glad we did this, man. This was cool.
And I have a feeling it's not the last time.
No, I have a feeling we'll be talking again sometime soon. I'm hoping it's via me going, hey, you said you needed a job. Disney says I can hire a personal trainer to be Hercules. You want to do it over Zoom? Can I have a picture of your front double by for fucking...
Just give him this as my resume.
Look at this fucking guy. He's hired. Get me LASIK.
Dude, but my calves are having a lot of trouble growing lately, though.
You got to do what Arnold does and cut the bottoms of your sweatpants off so you look at your metal calves. Eh?
Yeah. All right. Love you, dude.
Dude, man, this was fucking great. I love you, too, man. Thank you so much. Check out. I'm at Gabrus on all social media. See you around. Bye, shitheads.
High and mighty.
That was a HeadGum podcast. in a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold.
Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone.
People are loving this movie.
It's actually, it's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now, somewhere, somehow,
body blow, body blow, body.
Someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to, like, see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane.
It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Oh, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, 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 bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators.
We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room here.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dark.
I'm your dad.
Action, boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it! Do it! Come on! Do it now!